you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics for men of all time, the Treasury Edition, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And this is our very first bonus episode of Treasury Cast, or mini-sode, whatever else you want to call it, bonus feature, if you want to use kind of Treasury Comics parlance. And I'm here to talk about an article that I wrote for 13dimension.com. And it's an article called The Top 13 Treasury Editions That Need to Be Re-Released Ranked. And joining me is the major domo of 13th Dimension and frequent guest of Treasury Cast, Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Rob.
Thank you for joining me on this bonus episode. This is all new territory for the show, and I appreciate you doing this with me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it was funny when the whole thing really kind of came together was because I had written the story that DC was planning to re-release the Superman versus Wonder Woman facsimile edition in hardcover.
Yes.
And which, of course, came as a bit of a shock and a surprise and a wonderful welcome surprise, because it's been some time before since DC has put out a Treasury edition like this. They do have the new fun comic Famous First Edition coming up, but that's not nearly as, frankly, as exciting as the idea of Superman versus Wonder Woman coming out by Jerry Conway and Jose Luis García López. Go ahead, say it.
Praise be his name.
There you go. Okay. And so when I did that, of course, whenever I get really excited about something like that, I think to myself, what else can I do? And I thought, okay, if they're going to re-release this, let's get greedy and say, what are the top 13 other treasuries that we would love to see re-released? And of course, who do I think of when I immediately think of Treasury? I think of you when it comes to Treasury Edition, so I asked you to do it. It took you all of, I think, a minute and a half to agree.
Yep.
And about another minute and a half for you to write what was a terrific piece where we counted down 13 to number one, the top 13, as you mentioned. And it's a very eclectic list. And it's definitely better than I would have done myself, because I would have harped on the same things. But it's a really great wide-ranging list, both between DC and Marvel.
Well, thank you. I mean, yeah, I knew as soon as you pitched me the idea, I wrote back immediately and said yes, because I immediately had more than 13 ideas in my head.
Sure.
So I was like, well, this will be easy to write, because I have more material that I know what to do with. And so, yeah, you can go and read that article on 13dimension.com, and it's just the top 13 Treasury editions that need to be re-released. We'll have that link in the show notes. But we thought it would be fun to do this as a podcast. So you just kind of run through the list, very briefly talk about the books that I selected, why I selected them, and then Dan has some of his own suggestions as well for list. So we are starting at the bottom of the list, starting with number 13, and then we're going to finish off with the number one pick. Now, my rule that I went into this with was, of course, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of great comic books that I think would look great as Treasury editions. There's very few things that I don't want to see in a Treasury edition, really, but I decided, no, we're just limiting ourselves to books that were already done in the Treasury format, and now it's DC just redoing them. They did this for The Bible a couple of years ago. They did it for Superman versus Muhammad Ali, where they produced these nice hardcover slick editions. They're very durable, because, of course, all these treasuries are out of print, and most of them are very expensive to find on eBay or conventions and stuff. So it's great that they're doing it again for Superman versus Wonder Woman. So as Dan said, let's get greedy and ask for more. So the first one I'm picking is number 13, and I'm immediately, right off the bat, I'm violating my own rule, which is only picking books that were done as treasuries. But I have a special reason for this one. My first pick, number 13, is Justice League of America numbers 210 through 212, which was the eighth. Three-part storyline called When a World Dies Screaming, and it's a three-part story by Jerry Conway, him again, Rich Buckler and Romeo Tangal. And it's a JLA casebook story where the Justice League takes on these aliens that are basically going to take over the Earth because there's this special genetic flaw in this guy. It's a whole big complicated thing. It is a Irwin Allen sized adventure. I mean, it goes to multiple planets. There's giant spaceships. It's a huge story. It's a JLA typical kind of just universe spanning story. Now, why would I pick Vista Via Treasury? Well, because I learned a couple of years ago, it was meant to be a Treasury. Originally, DC Comics commissioned Jerry Conway, Buckler, and Tangal to do this story as a Treasury, and it was going to be one of their all-new collector's editions. And apparently, it took – I don't want to say it took so long as if they went past the deadline, but it took long enough that it got to the point where by the time they were done – DC wasn't really doing much of the way of original Treasuries, and all the material was shelved, which just seems unbelievable that you would shelve this. But they put it in a drawer, and then I guess a bunch of years later, maybe Jerry Conway decided he wanted a few months off and wanted to take a vacation or something, and they plugged this story into three issues of Justice League, commissioning two new covers by George Perez for the first and third installments. The middle installment, the cover looks like it's just an image that maybe Buckler drew at the time, or maybe was pulled from another page or something. And so they broke it up into three parts. And I remember being, as a kid, being like, why aren't Zatanna and Firestorm in on this mission? And then it says it's an untold tale from the casebook. You're like, oh, okay, this is before they join. And when you read the comics and you know the history of it, that this was built for a Treasury, you could see that Rich Buckler, in typical Rich Buckler style, was swinging for the fences. I mean, right. He does some amazing double page spreads and full page shots, and he really was trying to make use of the format, which of course never got to be. So I would love to see this done in the original format it was intended, as a Treasury.
Yeah, it was a great choice, and I like that you did it. When going into the list, one of the things that you did was not just they had to be, and this was the whole point, was that I was looking for Treasuries that would be re-released, not 13 Treasuries that we would like to see.
Because right.
we've done that similar, you know, in right. the past. I wanted this to be very specific about re-releases. And I personally have no problem with doing the ones that have a lot of reprints in them. But you were more inclined to stick with ones that had original material
right.
for the most part.
Right.
And I appreciated that about the list. And I think that actually makes the list work in an especially strong way. This was a really good way of addressing this particular issue, because you're right. We never did get to see it in the way it was intended. And that would be very cool if DC did that. But leading into the next, you're just sort of violating your rule again with your
yep.
next pick, the number 12 pick, which is an all reprint pick.
Right. The
it's
Marvel Treasury number one, The Spectacular Spider-Man, Marvel's first Treasury, which is all reprints. It's all Spider-Man. But I mean, DC's always going to have my heart a little more than Marvel. I was more of I read comics of every company, but I was a little more of a DC kid than I ever was a Marvel kid. But DC really kind of like tiptoed into the Treasury format, but like with like Rudolph and, you know, ghosts and Tarzan, as opposed to starting off with, you know, Superman or Batman.
Right.
Marvel kind of knew, hey, we're selling these to be keepsake editions. So
right.
bang, right off the bat with their first issue, it's the Spectacular Spider-Man featuring a cover by John Romita, which is about as iconic as it gets. And it's a great collection of Spider-Man stories. There's a John Romita story. There's a Steve Ditko story. There's some great villains. There's some fun kind of bonus material that they did. I mean, like I said, all this material has been reprinted in numerous trade paperbacks, but this collection is so beautiful as a single edifice that it really would look great as a hardcover. So I felt comfortable saying, yeah, it's all reprints, but who cares? It'll still look so good, you know, buying it again in hardcover at this giant size.
Especially the cover alone, which is my all-time favorite Spider-Man cover. And to be able to have that in shiny hardcover would just be
yeah. –
that would be worth the price that they would put on it right alone, because it's like buying – it in and of itself is a piece of art. But as a kid, I had this also. I was a much more devout DC kid than a Marvel kid, but I loved Spider-Man. And this was one of my absolute favorites when I was a kid. And of course, it holds up today because of what's in the, you know, what's in the issue. You know, you even get the face it tiger. You've hit the jackpot.
Oh,
you know,
man. Scene. Yeah. The moment. Yeah.
There's so many great things. Plus, you know, the stuff like how do Spider-Man's powers work and the Daily Bugle thing. I mean, it's just, it's packed. I love this. And I don't have a problem with the way, you know, with the idea of them reprinting reprints, like in the same way that DC recently reprinted Wanted, the comic book Wanted in a hardcover edition, which was funny because it's basically reprinting a comic book that was full of reprints.
Right.
So that, that was, but I thought that was really cool. So there's definitely a couple that I'll mention later, but I would have no problem if they re-release this. I would be first in line to buy it.
Very cool. So all right, number 11 is Superman and His Incredible Fortress of Solitude, which is from DC Special Series number 26, which was an all original story by Roy Thomas and Ross Andrew. And it's basically Superman. The plot of it is that Superman finds out that the Earth is going to be destroyed in 24 hours, and the clues to stopping it seem to lie inside of his fortress, and that gives us an excuse to go through Superman's history via the fortress. And it's all full of crazy Superman lore and all these nutsy stuff where it's like, you know, the interplanetary zoo and like his thing of like his trophy room and his collection of kryptonite and that weird bunch of statues featuring his friends next to their civilian identities, which is like, why would you ever have that? It makes no sense. I mentioned Irwin Allen earlier up in the list, and you know, Irwin Allen was the 70s figure. He's a, you know, the big filmmaker. He wanted spectacle. That's what he excelled at, and this, that's why I make those comparisons, because that's what this material kind of is. And so that's, I just think this would be a nice handsome volume for Superman fans to have, because it's just, it's reminding you of the crazy history of Superman that is kind of, that's been scrubbed away. Some of it's been brought back over the years, but basically it's a Superman that doesn't exist anymore, and it's a fun book.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is like a distillation of Bronze Age pre-crisis Superman.
Yeah, it's a really fun little story. So number 10, I picked MGM's Marvelous Wizard of Oz, which is actually the first ever Marvel and DC co-production. They decided, the history of this was, they were both apparently working on adaptations of The Wizard of Oz, and then they realized, well, that's kind of mutually assured destruction. So let's just get together and do it as one. And they did. And it's again by Roy Thomas, this time drawn by John Buscema and Tony DeZuniga. And it's pretty much just an adaptation of the movie, not the book. The book is in public domain, but it's an adaptation of the movie. And it's got a beautiful cover by John Romita, much like the Spider-Man book. And, you know, this is not something, obviously, that's going to appeal to a lot of comic book fans. But Wizard of Oz, of course, is enduringly popular. You know, a lot of people maybe listening to this are probably too young to remember that Wizard of Oz used to be shown on TV every year, and it was an event. It was a big event.
It was.
And Mego had a toy line in the 70s. I mean, the Wizard of Oz is just one of those things that goes on forever. And so I could see this being the kind of thing you would sell to Wizard of Oz fans, not so much comic book fans.
Sure. Yeah, so, no, I agree. I thought that was an interesting pick. It wouldn't be one of the ones that I would have picked because I wouldn't have thought of it, but I was glad that you did it because it really gave the list a different kind of spin.
Right. I wanted to have some non-superheroes. And speaking of non-superheroes, I'm playing favorites with number 9, which is Dick Tracy, limited collector's edition number C40. This was DC's one and only attempt at a Dick Tracy comic book because apparently it was a giant bomb. Nobody bought it. And from what I learned from Bob Rozakis, he thought that, from what he remembered, the story was that Saul Harrison, DC's president, had picked up the rights to Dick Tracy for, like, peanuts and thought, well, let's give it a shot. And then no one bought it, and that was the end of that. But I love this book. It's one of my favorite treasuries. It tells a complete arc of the Flat Top story, plus it has a bunch of bonus features. And I just would love to own it as a hardcover. And the little detail that I threw in, which I appreciate you added to the piece, Dan, was that as a kid, when I was watching MTV, MTV was just starting up. It was a big thing. Of course, one of the early videos, because, you know, back in the days when MTV only had a couple of videos to play, they played the same 15 videos ad nauseum, because that's all they had.
Over and over.
A lot of Rod Stewart. And one of the videos they played was The Clash, Rock the Casbah, which is a very famous song. And there's a moment in the Rock the Casbah where we see the band sitting in a pool, and this guy, where the sheik runs by, and reading reading Dick Tracy's Treasury Edition is Joe Strummer. And I'm like,
it's crazy.
Huh? First of all, that comic book would have been, what, like 7 years old by that time? So it had to have been in Joe Strummer's collection. Right. It's not like something you would just go pick up on a newsstand. And I mean, I'm sorry, The Clash in 1982, and as ever thus, The Clash was the coolest of the cool. So to me, it's like, if this was cool enough for Joe Strummer to read comic books, what's wrong with me, man? I mean, come on. So I just love it. I would love to own this. And Dick Tracy, of course, is you know, has been back sort of in the public consciousness because Joe Staten's been drawing it for a bunch of years. Mm-hmm. And I, again, I'm playing favorites. I would just love to own this one.
Sure.
Next up is number 8 is Captain America's Bicentennial Battles. Look, I know America's having a rough time lately. It's not a whole lot to celebrate. But this is an all original Captain America story by Jack Kirby, where Captain America bops through time. What more do I need to say about it?
Yeah, an American history lesson and Captain America and Jack Kirby, 1976. That's all you need.
Yeah, Kirby weirdness. It's great. Next up is one that I was very sure I was always going to include it on this list, but I knew that if I didn't, Dan would have probably not even run the piece. And it's Batman Limited Collector's Edition number C51, which is the Ra's al Ghul saga, featuring a wraparound Neil Adams cover, which is one of the single finest Batman images ever done.
Ever. Yeah. You wrote your thing. You said, you know, aside from the fact that Dan Greenfield would no longer talk to me if I didn't include this book on the list. I like the way you started that. It made me laugh when I was reading it. But then I also added as a postscript there, Dan adds, this should have been number one.
Yes.
Just saying. because it, this is me. This is my wheelhouse. This is the one right here. This is of all of them that I would want to see reprinted, because this particular story, and we did a podcast, you know, we did an episode on it.
Yep.
Yeah. Was it the first one, or was one of the first ones we did?
And the second one we did together.
Right. Okay. So this to me was the Batman movie that should have been in the 70s. And to see it in this scope and to see it, like DC just reprinted it for the first time in a long time in hardcover for the first time, actually using this famous wraparound cover, which is great.
Yeah, how could you not?
And I love the fact that they did it, and I love the fact that they just put it out again in hardcover. But what I wouldn't give to see it in a durable hardcover treasury size that you could just put on the bookshelf and just, you know, I would, if there's a Batman story, and there are many of them, but this is one of the Batman stories that deserves that kind of treatment. And I would, if the Superman Wonder Woman one sells, and you know how these things go, that means that they are likely to do more.
Sure.
Okay. So given the fact that the regular facsimile editions, you know, the standard size facsimile editions that DC's been putting out, there's been an inordinate number of them have been Neil Adams issues. So I can't help but think that if the Superman Wonder Woman sells and this becomes a thing, I got to imagine it wouldn't take too long for them to put this out.
I hope so, because it's gorgeous. I remember Alex Ross went on and on about that cover image. He talked about, I think it's in that Batman cover to cover book, where he talks about how much it's just one of the most impossibly beautiful images of Batman ever done. So
yeah, I you can even look it up at 13th Dimension. I interviewed Neil Adams about this particular image, and he talked about how he did it and, you know, what techniques he used, and he, it's just, I actually have a signed print by him of this hanging in my Batman room, as it were, here at 13th Dimension headquarters. And he, it's just an absolutely striking image.
Yeah, it's great. It probably should have been higher up, I admit, on the list. So number 6, Superman and Spider-Man Marvel Treasury number 28, which is their second team-up. This one is not, I will admit, it's not quite as exciting as the first team-up, which we'll get to. But it does feature Dr. Doom and the Parasite, which is great. It features appearances by Wonder Woman and the Hulk, which is fun. Like, they threw those two in. Yeah. And mostly, I really want to see this cover by John Romita and Bob, painted by Bob Larkin on a hardcover, because it's just a beautiful image. Superman, Spider-Man swinging in with Dr. Doom and the Parasite looking all menacing. I just love it. I just would love to see this again as a hardcover.
Sure.
Number 5 is Savage Fists of Kung Fu. the special collector's edition. And the reason I put this out, because first of all, obviously the movie is coming out at some point. We don't know what's going to happen to movies in general.
Right.
But eventually at some point we will get the Shang-Chi movie. But the reason I really wanted to – I mean, hey, that's a timely way to time it in is with the movie. But also is for some strange reason, Marvel did not make this an issue of Marvel Treasury Edition. They gave it its own one-off special collector's edition. And so for that reason, I think a lot of people that even may be fans of Master of Kung Fu don't even know this book exists because it just – like you don't know to look for it. If you discover the Marvel Treasury Editions and you start trip hammering through it like on Mike's Amazing World, you're like, oh, Spider-Man, Hulk, Defenders, The Avengers, Fantastic Four, of course. Never do you get to Master of Kung Fu because they just did it as a one-shot, which is just baffling to me. It's got a nice, very nice cover by John Romita. They all do. I mean, all these Marvel Treasuries did. But I mean, with the movie coming out, there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And I think it's a great idea because the nature of what these stories were, to see them in the oversized scope, I think are, you know, would be great. And also, I just love the fact that it was such a kitschy thing for them to do in the 70s, that this was even a thing. I just love it for, you know, on its own terms. You're right. It would make a great tie-in to the movie. And the thing is that, as you know, these companies copy each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if the Wonder Woman Superman thing does sell for DC, don't be surprised, because Marvel has actually been putting out Treasury.
They have, yeah.
They've been putting out, you know, a couple of years ago they were putting out, you know, anthologies, and now they've been putting them out for newer material. I would love to see something like this put out by Marvel. I would buy it in a second.
Yeah, and again, never understand why they call it Savage Fists of Kung Fu as opposed to Master of Kung Fu. Now, I know that some of the stories, it's not all Shang-Chi. It's Iron Fist and Sons of the Tiger.
Right.
So maybe they were trying to, you know, make it more all-encompassing. But again, you would think you would use the brand name, which is Master of Kung Fu, which is the title.
Well, I'm trying to remember, but I think – wasn't the magazine version – called Savage Fist.
Oh, you're right. Maybe that's what they were trying to tie it into. Okay.
That might have been it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So number four, Superman versus Shazam, all new collector's edition number C-58. Once again, by Jerry Conway and Rich Buckler, this time inked by Dick Giordano. And yeah, I mean, it was an all new collector's edition. It features appearances by Supergirl and Mary Marvel, which is great. It features one of the great oddball villains of all time. It's the guy who has eyeballs hanging from his ears, which is just fantastic. Superman just hated everybody in the 70s. He's just beating up everybody. But it's a great story. It's fun. It's Rich Buckler. Again, it's Irwin Allen, widescreen, planet-shattering kind of story. And it's just, you know, it's a great, fun story. You get to see Supergirl flirt with Captain Marvel and Mary Marvel flirt with Superman, which is really fun. And it deserves to be reprinted.
Yeah. It's, you know, I like this. You know, as far as the Superman Captain Marvel team ups over the years, my favorite actually is the one that from DC Comics Presents that featured Hoppy the Marvel Bunny.
Oh, Hoppy the Marvel Bunny, yeah.
I love that story. But I got to tell you that if there, other than like the classic C.C. Beck style of Captain Marvel or Shazam, if you must, my favorite artist to draw, Don Newton is great too. But I love the way Rich Buckler drew Captain Marvel.
Me too.
Loved it.
Me too.
Because to me, it looked like he was drawing the Mego Captain Marvel, the Mego Shazam figure. The way the hair was, the eyebrows are. I just loved the way he drew the character. And I loved, you know, just this idea of course, Superman and Shazam. They're the opposite sides of the same coin. The fact that they did this, of course, at a time when Shazam was still something that DC was really pushing. It was a great choice for them to do it. And this is another one I agree with.
Yep. Number three is Star Wars Marvel Special Edition number three. Now, of course, back in the 70s, Marvel knew that a Star Wars comic was basically licensed to print money, so they did it in every format available. They had a digest, a little paperback digest of Star Wars, and they had it in the regular comic. They did them as Treasury Editions, and then they took the first two Treasury Editions, which were the adaptations of the movie, the first three issues and then the second three, and then they put them in one big book, which is 114 pages. It's thick, one of the thickest treasuries out there, might even be the thickest. And it's all in one book with a nice new front cover and back cover. And, you know, I mean, it's Star Wars. I don't have to explain why you think this would make money. I mean, who wouldn't – if you imagine if you saw this at, like, a bookstore, not that they have those anymore, but if they had bookstores, this would be a great thing for Star Wars fans because it's classic Star Wars, and it would be nice and fun to see it big again.
I can't believe they haven't done it already.
Yeah, yeah.
Of all of the ones on the list, this is the one that should have been done by now. I'm stunned that they haven't. I can't imagine what the reasoning would be, because I would think that it would sell like crazy. And if they, you know, there's a couple, you could do two versions. You could have a variant cover where this particular cover is done by Alex Ross instead.
Oh, boy.
You know, because, you know, the Marvel does that a lot. They've got the direct market edition versus the bookstore edition. I mean, there's so many ways they could have done this. And the thing that's funny about this, just a very quick aside, I got my mouth washed out with soap because I bought this when I was, when I was 10 or 11 years old. Because I had the first two Treasuries. I didn't even know that Star Wars came out in individual issues. I got the Treasuries right off the bat. And then I was at the store and I saw the third one and I saw that it was all the same thing, but it was all in one really cool package with all, and I was like, I have to have this. I have to have this. And I asked my mom for it. She's like, no, you already have the others. You don't need this. I'm like, no, Mom, I have to have this. So I went and I bought it on my own. And then I lied to her and said someone had given it to me. And she saw it right through me. I mean, I did not hold up under scrutiny at all. And the next thing I know, I'm getting my mouth washed out with soap for lying. All because of this, and I was not allowed to keep it. It wasn't until I was an adult that I was able to finally get the copy that I wanted to get. Finally, now I have all 1, 2, and 3. And, well, Mom, I'm too old for you to wash out my mouth with soap. So there you go.
I find your lack of honesty disturbing. Oh, it's just terrible. That's awful. You should at least get to keep the book at that point. You're suffering the punishment.
I suffered the punishment. You'd think she'd at least. But no, she went all in. She's like, well, I'm not putting up with lying.
Wow, Mama Greenfield bringing the hammer down. That is rough.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry to bring up that traumatic memory for you. I didn't mean to trigger you with this list. So number two. If you haven't figured it out by now, because I haven't gotten to it, it's Batman versus the Hulk, DC Special Series, number 27. It's the very last DC Treasury that they ever did. It was the last Marvel and DC team-up in the Treasury format. They eventually did do X-Men Teen Titans, but not as a Treasury. It's by Len Wein, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, and Dick Giordano. I covered it with Ryan Daly on the show a couple episodes back. It's one of the most unlikely team-ups. You know it was contrived because they were both marquee stars as opposed to, say, Batman and Captain America. But Len Wein, damn it, makes it work. It's a great story. It's super fun. It's 70 pages of JLGL artwork getting to draw Marvel characters, which we never got to see. Because there is a sequence where we see some conjurings of some of the Hulk villains. So not only do we get to see the Shaper of World, not anybody's favorite, but we get to see appearances by like the Leader and the Rhino when they're on the back cover. So, I mean, just by that alone, the novelty of seeing JLGL draw Marvel characters is great. But it's also a great story. I mean, Len Wein makes these two unlikely characters really flow together. It's a great book and absolutely should be back in print.
Yeah, it's another one. Well, I'll mention that if you look it up at the site, I interviewed Len Wein about this particular issue and the fact that people take the – you know, they would always take issue with the fact that Batman found a way to take out the Hulk by kicking him in the chest.
Right, right.
And everybody's like, that would never happen. And he actually explains in the interview why he thinks that was legitimate. So if you want to find that out, just look it up at 13.
Just gets away with it. Just barely gets away with it.
Yep.
And then finally, number one, I wasn't trying to be cagey here. This is the most obvious answer. The number one pick should be Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man. This was the biggest event possible. It was the first time Marvel and DC's marquee characters were meeting. It was done by, say it with me, Jerry Conway, Ross Andrew, and Dick Giordano. It was done as a one-off book. It's not like a Marvel Treasury Edition or a limited collector edition. It's a one-shot. Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man. They take on Dr. Octopus. I mean, it is just and Luthor, of course. Conway knew that he had to deliver something special for this ridiculously historic team-up, and he did. And DC and Marvel both knew you couldn't just do this as a regular comic. That's just not special enough. And from the great cover of the two of them about to square off, featuring the back cover where they're practically doing like an I'm with Stupid sort of pose in the background, which I think is great.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a classic book. To find a copy of it on eBay is going to cost you $100. Even in the worst condition imaginable. So this just needs to be back in print, and this should be the first one that Marvel and DC start off with. If DC Marvel want to do a hardcover Treasury, this is where you start.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, Neil Adams had something to do with this too. He ghosted over a lot of the artwork
and
made contributions. But I even love how knowing the backstory of the negotiations of how the cover had to be and how the characters had to play off each other. And then, you know, the way they negotiated so much about, you know, page appearances and panel appearances. I mean, they were really meticulous about trying to make things as even as possible. And it works really, really well. And I also love the fact that where they are is at the top of the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. So even that, the grandiosity of where they're showing down is terrific too. I mean, and to me, it's appropriate. I mean, you could say it should be, you know, Metropolis or whatever, but it works better that it's real life. It works better that it's New York City. It works that it's the Empire State Building. It's perfect. Yeah. And I agree.
It's a classic book. So yep. that is my list. I get into more details over on 13th Dimension, but that's basically my list. It was an enormously fun thing to consider and go through these books. I'm never going to turn down the opportunity to talk about Treasuries because obviously everyone knows I love the format. But so before we sign off, Dan, you said you had a couple of suggestions that you would have done if you had put the list together yourself. So what are your ideas for some books that deserve the hardcover treatment?
Well, the first one as far as just a straight up, not a famous first edition, is Limited Collector's Edition number C-37, which is the All Villains issue for Batman, which I think is really the best, other than the C-51, is the best of the Batman Treasury.
Great Apparo cover.
Great Apparo cover.
Oh, that's redundant, of course, but yeah.
Right, I know, which is even being turned into a statue. We did a story on that recently.
Right.
But it's not only one of Apparo's greatest covers, but it's basically a primer, with the exception of the Riddler, of pretty much every great Batman villain other than Ra's al Ghul, all from the Golden Age, and you really get a real sense of the overview of Batman's history. You and I also did this as a separate episode.
Yep, that's the first episode of Treasury Cast.
That's right, and we can go into that. And to me, I would love that in hardcover.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that would be great. That'd be great.
So that one tops the list along with C-51. And because, you know, the first thing I want of everything is Batman, I would love, and I know that they did these in hardcover anyway, but I would love to see them re-release the first famous first editions in hardcover. I think that they, you know, they're doing all these other facsimile editions, both Marvel and DC and other companies have gotten in on it. But I think there would be a wonderful market for Batman number one as a hardcover, you know, Treasury edition. And to, you know, actually more than DC, more than Detective 27, to me, Batman number one would be the one. But I would also
– because it's all Batman, right?
Yeah, and it's fantastic. There are a couple of other minor, backup features. But it's also one of the single greatest comic books ever. The story, every story in there is
the first
really,
Joker,
really
the first Catwoman.
First Joker, first Catwoman, the last Hugo Strange until Engelhart and Rogers. And every story is great. So it really, really holds up. And I would love to get that in a nice, you know, sturdy hardcover. After that, it's like I could probably just come up with a half a dozen. Mm-hmm. But being the Batman aficionado that I am, those are the ones that immediately come to mind that I would love to see in hardcover.
Yeah, I had some of the famous first editions on the short list, and then I just got more excited about the newer material, I was like, let me leave those up. But yeah, there's a bunch of good ones in there, so there's a lot of fun stuff. And ironically enough, those were issued in hardcover in the 70s by a separate publisher. I have some of them. They're incredibly hard to find.
Yeah.
But I do have some of them, and they come with this nice slipcase cover and like a dust jacket, and it's all official looking, so...
which is really why I would love to see it done that way now, because they did come out in hardcover. They are hard to find. These books deserve that kind of treatment. And the famous first editions are an imperfect lineup because not everything is included, but it's almost as good as it gets. And I wouldn't even mind seeing them add to it, like doing Detective number 38. Or even some of the stuff in the Silver Age that they never did, they've done regular facsimile editions of like Brave and the Bold number 28, and there's Marvel ones that they could do, but I would love to see some of those in oversized editions. And I do like what Marvel's doing right now with their king size books, which are bigger than Treasury editions. They're the same size as the IDW artist editions, but they're fully colored as they were published, so you can get like the Galactus trilogy now in gigantic size.
Oh, they're massive. Oh, my
Lord. Yeah, and the Spider-Man stuff by Ditko. And we just did a story that there's another one coming of the Eternals. The entire Eternals series by Jack Kirby is being done in that gigantic size. I'm not a big Eternals guy, but I can only imagine what that's going to look like at gigantic size.
Perfect timing with the movie and everything.
Yeah,
so
well,
it makes
right.
sense.
We'll see. Right, exactly.
So, all right. Well, very cool. So, Dan, thank you so much for asking me to do the list because it was a lot of fun. And thank you for joining me on this little bonus episode to sort of plug it because I want people to read it. I love 13th Dimension. I've been writing for it for years now, and I really enjoy it. It's a real source of pride for me that I write for this very nice website, and I plug it as much as I can when I have a new column up. I don't write nearly enough as much as I should, but I really enjoyed doing this one. So thank you for doing this little mini-sode with me.
I really appreciate it. Like you, I'm not as much the expert on Treasury editions as you are, but I love them just the same. And same thing, any chance to talk about them, I'll take it. So thanks for having me on, and I'm glad that you did the story because it got a great response from readers. And so the fact that even more people who might not have seen it will be able to discover the story through this podcast, very happy about that too. So I'm glad we did this.
Awesome. Yeah, go to 13dimension.com, and the link to this particular piece will be in the show notes. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Until the next episode, as I said in the previous episode that dropped early this morning, go big or go home.
I had just left Marvel to go to DC. I was also an editor for DC at that time, and I wanted to work with Ross. And there was a tremendous logic to this because Ross was one of the few artists who had actually drawn both Superman and Spider-Man. I mean, the challenge for us was to do a story where each character got the same amount of space in the book, the same level of impact, you know, the same contribution story, the same number of big splashes, you know, and so on. And to somehow justify the idea that in a battle between Superman and Spider-Man, that Spider-Man wouldn't be knocked out in the first 5 seconds. And that's what we did. And basically, we wanted to have fun because we knew that this was the ultimate fanboy experience.